how do spirituality, psychology, and different identities that we may hold interweave to create the unique picture of you, of who you are? And why do we often feel called to create something artful, meaningful, powerful, bigger than ourselves out of this discovery of self? Hey, y'all. I'm Reese, and welcome to Making Meaning. Making Meaning is a podcast by the Cohere Collective here to help guide you along your path to make meaning in a way that makes sense for you. This week, I am joined by Loveth Hurd. Loveth and I met when we were in high school together, but now Loveth is a photographer, an artist, the creative director of a Chicago-based magazine, and just an all-around beautifully well-thought, depth of soul person. This episode runs the gamut of things that we like to talk about here on Making Meaning, and we dive into a little bit of Loveth's spiritual deconstruction. We also talk about neurodiversity and queerness and how all of these different seemingly disparate identities actually make up intersectional meaning in a way that's really important to the way that we conceptualize of self. And then we dive into creativity and art and the creative process and how photography really just captures these things that we're talking about and the power of the artist in art and why that's so important to our own personal journeys. Why creating things external to the self is a vastly important piece of creating the self too. I do want to provide a brief content warning. Throughout this episode, we do discuss a variety of traumas, such as racism, sexism, homophobia, ableism, different discrimination against different identities, and how that plays out in real time and in someone's future growth. There really isn't one specific time that I can warn you to just jump ahead through because this is imbued throughout our conversation of Loveth's story. So if those topics are going to be difficult for you to listen to, this may not be the right episode for you, or I really recommend that you listen with deep care and intention. Okay, I believe that's all I have for you. So as always, let's take a deep breath. And get started. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I'm so excited. It's so good to see you. And yeah. I can't wait to jump into conversation.
Same here. Thank you for having me, Reese.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, the first question that I always start with, just to try and set the tone for our time together, is what is one thing you're grateful for?
Wow, I'm grateful to be self-aware. I would say that. Yeah.
What does self-aware look like to you? Because I think that's really beautiful and important for growth, but I think it's also a word that is overused a lot, and a lot of people may think that they're self-aware, but we all have blind spots on ourselves, right? So not to like project anything, but what does that self-awareness mean slash look like to you?
Yeah, I would say my ability to honestly take accountability when someone is either telling me that I hurt them or telling me that I'm wrong or me realizing that I'm wrong. Just kind of recognizing my humanity and others too. I feel like that's what it means for me to be self-aware, because I find a lot of people, it's a super easy term to like throw around. And there's been so many times where I haven't been as self-aware and I've said that. And I also am not, I have so much more to be self-aware about.
We all do.
Yeah. As a young 23-year-old, but as of now, I think with what's going on, it's really important for us to be self-aware enough to take accountability for our actions of the past, present, and future for the sake of everyone around us. And yeah, I'm very grateful to at least start to understand like what needs to be done.
Totally. I think that's so beautiful. And like, to be able to celebrate that, you know, you have started and you are on the path. I think that's something that for people trying to, I guess this is just a self-report, but trying to like do justice work and grow and be a better person, it's easy to, like, the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. And it's easy to just continue to beat yourself up. And it's important to also have the space and time to celebrate the ways in which you have grown and you are getting better and you are learning. So I love that. Second question, to really just give us a foundation to jump off of, what is your story? It's a very big question, but whatever you feel called to share in this moment is perfect.
Yeah. Wait, I love that question. My story. I mean, I feel like obviously I'm coming to understand it. I like one day in an act of like journaling, I was like, I'm going to start my memoir. And I was like, I have a horrible memory, so I want to write everything that's happened to me so I don't forget it when I'm older, because there's already so many things I've forgotten at 23. Who knows what I'm going to forget at 46? So I don't know. I started my memoir and I was just kind of like, I want to write my story. And I don't want it to all be like about my traumas, but I would say, yeah, I went to Lake Hill Preparatory School and that's where I met Reese. And honestly just kind of realized like what it means to have such personal connections on an everyday level, like whether it's within your control or not. And I think that's right. Like that's what got me started. Is realizing like going to the same little private school that I went to for such a long time, like those personal connections over the years is what got me through it, like regardless of my experiences at the school or outside of school. And I think that kind of that expectation kind of came with me into college. And that's when I started to realize I'm a very personal person, but also there's so much more going on too. Like I'm an artistic person. I like to say this ironically, a social justice warrior. So, and like, I'm also pretty intelligent and I'm like self-realized neurodivergent, etc. And I think, yeah, that kind of started just so much of my spiritual journey and trying to connect to myself and find things that allow me to express myself, and honestly just heal. So I think like, you know, finding those close personal connections through COVID is something that a part of my story. And that just kind of opened my whole horizon to like Chicago and like the artistic scene. And also like realizing how important it is to collaborate with people and being around people that you feel safe to do so with, in so many ways, not just artistically, but yeah, just kind of moving out of my hometown made me realize so many different things about myself. And one of them being like photography, which is awesome. And also my special interests for psychology and astrology and spirituality, and also, what it means to be a human being and holding on so tightly to our humanity in such a tumultuous time. So so my story is like every experience and connection that's brought me to here right now, and realizing that all of that is the reason why I'm like doing what I'm doing. So yeah, I don't know.
No, yeah, that's makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. That's beautiful. And thank you for sharing. I think I just so relate to, especially in you talking about like the multifaceted nature of this story, but it's like they all hinge on this piece that is like connection, whether that be a connection to yourself or to community or to other people or to a higher power, spiritual reality, right? I just absolutely love that. And I think that that has been a really important part of my journey too, is in seeing the way that all of these are connected. What do you think? I mean, this is like asking you to put something indescribable into words, so apologies for that up front. But the thing, what do you think it is that draws you to all of these different seemingly disparate parts of life that clearly are very interrelated, whether it be astrology or social justice or writing, photography, art, and you know, all of these different avenues? What's the piece that those intersect in for you? What is it that sparks that drive?
Yeah, I would say the humanity of it all. I feel like that's probably gonna be the main thing for me. Like, I, as someone who has like grown up to be very dissociative, but also have a very eccentric personality, I feel like there's so many times where I felt disconnected from my own humanity and didn't realize like how much emotion and passion that I do have for so many things. Like, not just like, yeah, it's like it kind of felt so blurry until I realized that like this goes so much deeper and has so many different roots and can go and look like so many different things. And like the pure connection of it all, it's like at the end of the day, like I feel like that the center is like clinging to my humanity. Like, I, when it comes to photography, for example, like I love a finished product of like seeing how beautiful people are and also how awesome fashion is. Like, I would consider myself a fashion photographer, but just feeling so satisfied of like, wow, two people came together to make this happen and it looks awesome, and like we're gonna get praised for it, and then we're on to the next. Like, we all love attention, like let's be real. Like, and also accepting right. that I love attention, and like that, like that's not always a bad thing. And I feel like I've kind of just always seen that as like something that's bad, and like for society that's like so individualistic, I'm like, no shit. So yeah, I'm like just like realizing these things that I kind of thought were bad about myself, and like reframing as to like, oh, why did I think this is bad about myself, what caused me to feel this way, and realizing like there are people to point fingers to. Capitalism. You know what I mean? Like, capitalism, yeah. The patriarchy, all that stuff. And it's like clinging on to like, oh, like the fact that I'm connecting more with myself and my humanity is allowing me to realize so many things externally that have contributed to me forgetting myself. I'm like, I'm going to make it a mission to remember myself. And whatever needs to be done to make that happen, like, I'm going to do. And it's not bad to do that. Like, I don't know. We all feel guilty for doing things for ourselves, but it's not
bad. Yeah. No, if anything, it's radical. Like, that is justice in and of itself, right? It's like in a world that wants you to be a cog in the machine, saying, mm-hmm. no, I am it. And it's not a finished product, but it's not a product to begin with. Like, why are we trying to commodify human beings to begin right. with? Right. Just let it like be and bloom in and for itself. That's so beautiful. And I love what you're saying about attention too. You're so speaking to my Leo moon. Clearly, as someone with four podcasts, yeah, love attention. Yeah. But I totally agree that it's like, why are these things considered bad? And it's because of the way that wanting attention, wanting to be admired or at the center of something for what you do is a threat to the status quo, right? Inherently. Yep. And so I just, so your point is taken so well, right? That in the structures and power dynamics that we've inherited and internalized, there is so much of like self-love being radical in the face mm-hmm. of that, like actually is. And earlier you said like healing was one of these things that's been really, really important. And I think hearing you talk about like your memoir and this refusal to forget yourself, like that is so powerful. And can you tell me a little bit about what that maybe moment of inspiration where you realized I have been forgetting myself? Well, and maybe it wasn't even that. Don't let me put anything onto your story, but the inciting moment of I'm going to remember myself. When did that hit you and what was that like?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I feel like something that I had to accept is like I've chosen to be so passive in so many situations. And once like that passivity started to turn into rage, I was like, my rage needs to be listened to. Like I need to be listening to my rage and realizing like that is just showing me so much about the injustices, not only against myself, but so many other people. Like, and it started with like paying attention to what's going on around the world. I was enraged and I'm like, that's humanity right there. It's the fact that had this technically shouldn't have anything to do with me, but it literally is all I'm thinking about. Therefore, like, let's talk about it. And then starting to understand that like those injustices across the world are happening right here and internally. So like realizing that like I needed to address like, okay, I'm not going to forget these people that are suffering. Like why? And I can't do that if I'm forgetting myself. Like, so just, and then like, yeah, realizing so many situations where I feel like I did forget myself and like, but also trying not to internalize being a victim. And just so much of that, like back and forth, low-key like gaslighting myself. I'm like, no, like my feelings are valid. And like, let's focus on that first and like feeling that and like letting my feelings show me what needs to be addressed, period. And yeah, I feel like it's still manifesting in a lot of anger, but I'm trying to use that to my advantage. And like making sure it doesn't get out of control, but like if it does, like in the right context of like people are dying, let's be really mad about it, let's do something, guys, you know, like we really can use that to our advantage. It's not all bad. And also just realizing like as a Black person too and being around so many white people growing up, like how many times I betrayed myself because I was scared that I was going to be depicted as an angry Black woman. And it's just so easy to fall into that pattern. And then you start working in a corporate world and you realize how easy it is to be painted as an angry Black woman. But I don't care anymore. Like if you're going to paint me as an angry Black woman, because I'm angry. And let's talk about why I'm mad. So,
yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Like you said, like people are being murdered. Like that's, we should be mad. And to turn away from that anger, I mean, exactly like you said, to turn away from that anger is turning away from the people that atrocities are being committed against. And that is a turning away from the self in like, you have to turn away from your own humanity to turn away from that, from those people's humanity, to be able to numb yourself to the violence that is happening is to numb yourself. Right.
Right.
And exactly. you can't, the wise words of Brené Brown, you can't selectively numb. Hey, y'all, it's Reese hopping in the middle of our conversation here just to do the thing that's asking you to subscribe and like the video and comment down below. If you have been enjoying the episode, that really is the best way to let me know that you want to see more content like this, that you enjoy this, that you find these conversations meaningful and help you make meaning. That really is the intention behind every single one. And clicking subscribe is free, liking is free, commenting is free, and I would also love to know your thoughts. Have you had any insights throughout this episode so far? And any questions you may have? Let's chat about it in the comments, and I would love to know more about what this conversation has meant to you. Okay, back to the main conversation. It's numbing to everything. And I love what you said about rage too, that it is productive, right? Like all of the cliches and analogies of like fire is purifying and like you need to, there's the seeds that need to be burned before they can grow. And but one thing I've really been thinking about with fire too is how it's not just, I think when we think of rage, you think of like a blazing bonfire that's like all or nothing, but it can also be the thing that like stokes your hearth to keep community going. That is right. Like the gathering point, the connection point, that, you know, you can gently stoke and tend to. And it's also the thing that like warms your food and your heart on a cold night. It's really generative in a lot of ways. And it's so connected to love. We would not feel rage if we did not love, because
right.
Like I would have to imagine, please correct me if I'm wrong, the reason why you are so angry is because of the depth of the love that you feel for the people that are being wronged. And I think that's really beautiful. And getting comfortable with my own rage is something I've been on a journey with for sure. But yeah. I'd love to know more about your journey with that anger specifically. And obviously, like you said, being depicted as the angry Black woman, that is, it's an archetype for a reason, because it is continually fallen back on. And I actually just today was, the statue of the Black woman in Times Square and all the discourse online that's going on about it. It just popped up on my feed. And it's just so fascinating to see the ways in which seeing each other's humanity has to be the thing that we return to time and time again. Right. But talk to me about rage specifically and when you felt like you first started tapping into that.
I guess it started with me feeling, oh my gosh, I guess it started with my therapist. Shout out to my therapist.
Shout out to all of our therapists.
Right, shout out to all of our therapists for real, especially in a time like this where like, it's really hard to therapize a lot of our issues, period. And like, we are coming to therapy to talk about that. And our therapist, and I hope at least my therapist, has like an abolitionist frame of mind, and is very aware of how much rage we should be having about what's going on. And it started with like me sharing issues and how passionate and angry I was about them with certain people who weren't as angry about them. And I kind of was like, wait, why aren't you as angry? Should I be this angry? And just kind of like second guessing, like, why I'm so mad. And then like being told that like, I shouldn't be as mad as I am, because I should be focusing on my immediate reality and what I can control right in front of me. And I started to realize what a cop-out that is. Because like, you're basically telling me to put my empathy and humanity aside and just focus on what's going on in front of me. But what's going on in front of me is also what's going on over there. So it's like, once you deeply start to realize that the root of a lot of our issues are because of the system as it is, and like how much relief and happiness and joy we might feel if those problems were addressed, then you start to be mad. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, why am I the only one that's realizing how easy these things can be fixed if you guys just use your humanity, use your rage for good, instead of being very passive about what's going on right now? Passivity is not going to get us anywhere. Passivity is the reason we are here right now.
Yeah.
And I'm also like seeing perspectives about like just this whole concept of rage being projected onto people of color. But this rage started with colonialism. This rage started with white Europeans coming over to our, like, wherever, whatever. Started with white Europeans.
Basically everywhere.
Very mad. Like, right? I'm like, everywhere. Just being really mad and doing, like, really bad things about things and being very violent. And then, like, you know, obviously slavery and, you know, whipping people. It's like these ideologies, these rage, all the things that were the example that you guys set, you're getting mad that you were using it now. And then you're just putting it onto Black people when it's like you who started it. And it's you who gets very enraged when people point fingers at you for being wrong. And it's kind of crazy to, like, you know, kind of just realize how valid my rage is.
Yeah.
And how, for so long, how that's just been painted in a different narrative. And then just like realizing once again how many times I forgot myself. And that just made me more and more mad. And I would say this started about like kind of last year, once I like kind of graduated college and realized what it means to be an adult in America. Especially an adult who is not going to follow a traditional corporate path. Like, I want to be a therapist, and I want to do it ethically. So I'm not, there's a lot of things that are unethical about work. And I'm just, I'm not going to just do something for money that doesn't align with me. But so it kind of just started with me realizing, like, if I'm not going to forgive myself in every area, then like, that's just going to look kind of, it's going to look a little hard for a while until I get there. So recognizing that realizing like not everything is as sweet as it looks, and just kind of processing that and then validating my rage like through it all, and like making sure I'm not being invalidated for being enraged, like that's just kind of how it started. And like, obviously I'm still processing it, but I'm allowing it to show me much more than just like ignoring it and then choosing the path of least resistance. Like, I personally realize that's not going to get me anywhere. So yeah, I would say that's my journey with rage right now.
So beautiful. And I think finding a way, like, our emotions are our messages, right? They're I think it's kind of a falsehood to say any feeling is good or bad. It's what arises when you're in experience, in the human experience. And to, I think, exactly like you were saying, being taught to stifle that rage and that anger because it's ugly, because it's uncomfortable, because it doesn't, it makes you not palatable. It makes you uncomfortable to be around. And it's like, well, why are we why do you want to be comfortable with these things that we should be deeply uncomfortable with? And we need to get better at forcing the discomfort and really feeling that. I want to go back to Lake Hill in your story, because obviously that's where we met. And I don't know. It's just crazy. I love doing episodes with old friends because it's such a full circle moment to think about like how much we have grown and like where we are in a different place in our life. Like, it's just life is a beautiful, wild, weird thing. And one thing I've been thinking about a lot lately is the way that for the longest time in my head, I considered Lake Hill like a liberal bubble. right? That it was like this liberal thing that we could all kind of have this worldview that we all knew kind of what everyone thought, and it was good and safe and push in that direction, and coming to really go back into memory and deconstruct and rethink a lot of what was taught and a lot of like what wasn't said, and how even learning about like the difference between like neoliberalism and like progressivism and the distinction there, and just how, because it was maybe more liberal than other schools and communities that I had been in, there's also still like so much of this is the water that we swim in and you don't even realize, right?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a question in there, but how has looking back on different experiences in your life, and I suppose Lake Hill specifically, remind me, are you a lifer?
Yes.
Okay. I thought so. But yeah, what was your relationship like to the kind of social dynamic in a small, affluent, secular, I hesitate to use the word liberal, but because what does that word even mean anymore? But like liberal community, and how do you think that has informed your growth journey, both in positives and negatives?
Wow. Yeah. Great question. Wow. I mean, like, honestly, I guess since I went there my whole life, I never saw Lake Hill as liberal. I don't know. That's, yeah. And I guess it's because I was so deep in it. And I'm like, as a Black person, like, you just experience different kind of injustices and just obviously microaggressions, and don't realize it until you're out of it and grown. So that's kind of what happened to me. But I felt like, I don't know, just, yeah, I felt like, I think race needed to be talked about much more. I am very grateful for Lake Hill in ways, honestly, just because it definitely was a community, and for that, it was rather diverse and attempted to be inclusive, I would say. And that does go a pretty far way in Texas. So, like, don't get me, like, right. I understand, like, exactly what you mean. And I definitely liked how it wasn't, like, you know, a religious school or anything. Definitely was a space for all these different religions. So I felt like I was exposed to a good amount of things in that area that I didn't realize would benefit me until, like, I moved out of Texas. And I'm like, even though I came from Texas, I still went to a rather diverse school. And even though I had, like, racial things happen, like, I never got, like, beat up because I was Black or anything. So, but I feel like as someone who is neurodivergent coming from Lake Hill, there was no education on what it meant to be neurodivergent. And I know as a person who has worked with autistic kids and realized that a lot of autistic children or their parents, if they're not going to a specific school, like, would rather them go to private school. And, like, leaving Lake Hill, I'm just kind of realizing, like, after the fact, like, neurodivergent traits of a lot of people at the school that I feel like, not a lot of people, but I just feel like there should have been more neurodivergent education, like, especially when it comes to, like, friend groups and, like, being cliquey and stuff, and, like, people who weren't really involved in that, and, like, realizing who would get, like, the short end of the stick. Like, I wouldn't say people were, like, actively bullying, but, you know, kids are mean.
There are things I look back on and I'm like, no, that was bad, and I cannot believe I didn't say something, you know?
Yeah,
like, same. And just being like, holy shit. And this is from, and so like, I guess in what I'm saying that it's like, when you're in it and it's like using the fact that it's like, oh, well, we're secular, we're liberal, we're forward thinking. It almost becomes a, like a cover with which these other things go unsaid. And not to say that, you know, you shouldn't constantly be trying and progressing and growing, at all, but
yeah,
I think the more that I learn, the more I'm like, whoa, that like there were times that I was like looking back, I'm like, no, I was a bully. That was a bullying thing that I did. And I hold like a lot of shame and guilt over, or that was even like minimum, like clicky and all sorts of stuff. So sorry, I totally interrupted. Please keep going.
No, no, exactly. Like, that's exactly what I'm saying. I don't know. I one, have put a lot of that stuff deep, deep down. And I'm, like, still actively working through it and trying to remember. Like, literally one of the reasons I started my memoir is, like, to remember what happened at Lake Hill. Because it was such a crazy experience. And, like, there's even, like, it started, I think, everything for me when I started to realize, like, how bad things kind of really were for me and like the place that I was like when COVID happened and I got a minute to slow down for the first time in my life. And like, oh my gosh, just process. Like I went to the same school for 13 years and I was this person in this friend group and whoa, what just happened? And like, I was in all these activities. I was this social and I'm like shut down. Like, autistic meltdown to like the definition. And that's just kind of what made me realize like, whoa, what just happened? And like hold myself accountable for like the role that I played in so many things too. And like the dissociative nature of like being around the same people for literally every day of your life. Like it's just like this deep, so many things to work through for sure. And like that's school for you and it's a private school, small and stuff. But yeah, I felt like I started to realize my race for the first time too, for real. And I started to feel like, I genuinely think that was like one of the moments that made me start to process like that I needed to recognize my worth as a Black person, as a Black woman, as a queer person, like just so much. Cause I don't know. It was a pretty, a lot of suppression, a lot of repression, and a lot of once again, racial instances from teachers, students. And a lot of, like some homophobia too, just like not even like, just so many things that I wish that the school staffing talked about, just to give us some education. Like, hey guys, we have a pretty big neurodivergent population. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about that you should not be treating people differently based off of how they behave or like the fact that they don't want to talk to you. Let's talk about that. And let's realize that this is a diverse school and what that means and how you should be treating people that look differently from you. And just so many things, like if you're going to incorporate all these diverse people in the name of being liberal, make sure you're educating your staff and your students on how to address each other. So you don't have like situations like this where like we're still processing that crazy little time of our lives.
Totally. And I think completely agree. And I think the neurodiversity piece is one that I think is so fascinating because, I mean, you talk to anyone about Lake Hill now and it's like, wait, hold on. What happened? It's like, oh, yeah, I did put vice president of sticker club on my college application.
Yes.
That is a thing that I did. It's like, no, is that... like water bottle flipping club was an actual thing. Like, like let's let's think about it. Let's think about it. And it should be something that is, like you said, talked about and not just like existing without being addressed, because I think like you're saying, then it becomes something that is almost like taught repression, because it's like you don't even realize that you're not talking about the very things that you're doing, and that creates like this mind body disconnect.
Oh my god,
where it's like, what is even, how are these things going back and forth? They're just not, because you're just going about your day, but you're totally checked out of it. You're not, almost dissociative, like you were saying. And the amount of conversations I've had with people from Lake Hill that is like, I think I'm autistic. That is a thing that I'm coming to learn. And it's like, girl, I think we all are. I mean, obviously it's a spectrum, right? The more information that we learn about autism and different neurodiversity, like labels or whatever, it's like it's the spectrum. But I do think that that's so fascinating that a lot of people were attracted to Lake Hill in that it was this community of like very different people. But I think you're so right that that difference wasn't always handled with the most grace. So I guess I'd like to hear more about the neurodiversity realization for you. I have another question, but we'll start there because I don't want to throw too many questions at you at once. But what was that like in coming to like this point of self-discovery? And does it, how would you characterize your relationship to it now in terms of like, it being a, you know, labels are so complicated, and I think they're really just shorthand because you can't get into your entire life story every time you have a conversation with someone. So of course it's more than just that one label, but what's your relationship to that look like, and how did you get to that point?
Oh my gosh. I guess kind of realizing what it meant to be autistic. I am self-realized autistic. That's what I am labeling myself as, something that I processed in therapy. And once I realized that, which was like 2 years ago, like it started with me being like telling my friend like, hey, I think I'm autistic. And she's autistic. She's like, yeah, you are. I was like, oh, thank you so much.
She's like,
And I was like, I almost cried. I was like, this is the most validating thing you could have said to me, because, and like when I immediately like, or initially realized that about myself, I got so angry because I was like, there's been so many times where I felt betrayed because I didn't understand this about myself and I wasn't able to explain this, or felt like there's so many friendships that could have been like saved if they really understood that this is what I identify as, or this is what I am. And just like, yeah, it goes all the way back to Lake Hill and just kind of like this underlying like bullying, but people also being like, you're really cool and eccentric. It's just weird, like singling you out for being special and like you're this entertainment spectacle. It was just so bad. And like another reason why I have so much rage, because I'm like, I am not just entertainment, like literally just misunderstood. And like, and just realizing the neurodivergence in my family and like that they didn't even know anything about that. And that's why like I didn't, nobody went to seek a diagnosis or anything. So yeah, just feeling really, I was just feeling really upset, but I also felt so relieved and happy and grateful because I'm like, oh, I can finally understand myself and understand so many things that like have just felt like just a blur or gray area. And that was so liberating, honestly. It also just made my time at Lake Hill make so much more sense.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, this is why I like low-key thrived. Like, even though I was extremely dissociative, like, this is actually the environment I needed to be in order to get through school. And like, going through going to college and like starting online while I was going through like a severe meltdown, like I was like, oh, okay, like this is exactly what I need right now because I do not have the capacity for anything more. And yeah, just realizing my capacity for things and honoring that, and then starting to realize also how much rest is resistance. And that like is a whole other thing that's really liberated me too. That term I quote from Trisha Hersey of the Nat Ministry. She has a book, Rest is Resistance. And she's from Chicago, but yeah, she's really awesome. And like her, what all the Nat Ministry, what she's gotten going on has allowed me to honor as a Black person, and as a Black person who comes from like, you know, low class to middle class family, like how much rest we need a rest. Oh my gosh, we need a rest. And like realizing, like noticing my parents, for example, like kind of as they age out, and not age out, oh my gosh, they're great people, but just like no age. Yeah, like just like age and stuff, and like having to work so hard to make ends meet, and like me encouraging them to accept that, yeah, it's okay if you're resting now, like don't feel like you're betraying yourself because you're resting, like you need to rest, and I want you to process that and realize how much you are doing a service for yourself by resting.
Well, and to you and your entire family too, when they rest, right? Like not only does that set an example and like normalize it, because no matter how old you get, your parents are always like in the hierarchy of family, which is this weird built-in thing, but it's like parents always kind of set the tone of family gatherings, right? And it does set that example of like, no, this is a healthy thing to do for all of y'all, but also like you said, honoring themselves, and what a beautiful gift to the whole family that it's like, you've worked so hard for us, at least that's how I try and frame it to my parents, is like, this is you've earned this, you deserve it, you have worked hard, and also you don't need to earn it.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, like even unthinking that piece of it, that's like, hey, I've worked hard, I deserve the rest. And it's like, no, you're a human being, you deserve rest. Right?
Period. Exactly.
I really love hearing about like your conversations with your parents, because I think that's such a big part of growing up, and a lot of healing work is with our parents and with our family of origin. And I have gotten really lucky to have parents that want to have that conversation with me. And even if they don't understand, and even if like we're still working on certain things, or, you know, it takes time to get to certain places, they're always willing to have that conversation. And I have always felt like they're open to learning from me, like, especially as I started coming into my own, it's like, no, I want to hear your thoughts and your feedback. You're not just my kid anymore. You're now like an intellectual equal, and we can have deeper, important conversations about life, but also about our relationship. How is that been for you? Because I know you mentioned too, with like the neurodiversity in your family, and how, I don't want you to put any of your family members on blast, of course, but just in your relationship to being able to have these conversations after you've had realizations, what has that looked like for you and felt like to try and bring some of the healing to your family?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I feel like I've literally answered each question with, oh my gosh, thanks for asking.
That's perfect. I always go, I love that, and then on to the next question. So it's like, I get it. You're good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess when I started my healing journey, it started with me like healing from a breakup. in high school. Obviously, not gonna say any names, but yeah, it started me healing from a breakup in high school during COVID. And I think that's when I started to get really spiritual, and I started to share with my parents that I don't think I'm Christian anymore. And I think that was the most vulnerable thing that I've ever shared with them, because I knew how betrayed they feel. And I think that's what started me feeling comfortable sharing, like, potentially problematic, uncomfortable things with my parents, of like, oh, I'm gonna be myself and y'all are gonna have to deal with it. Like, if anybody's gonna be themselves, it's gonna be me. So here's what's going on. And as I started to have realizations about myself, I also started to deal with a lot of things with my parents that I felt like obviously needed to be addressed. And since we were, like, just living in the same home for, like, until I went up to the call, up till obviously before then, but, like, we were in each other's space, like,
right,
up until I moved to Chicago, it just caused, like, we had a lot of serious talks, and a lot of it included queer things. So that was, like, the main topic, and like queer things in the Bible, and then starting to get educated on the Bible and realizing like that a theologist, my professor, is telling me that the Bible is contradicting itself, therefore not all of it is true. That's okay. That has nothing to do with Christianity. Like, all of this is a message, and it doesn't mean that every single thing is a fact. Like, and I'm not saying that like your religion is invalid because of that. I'm just telling you the facts and what I learned from my university. So yeah, as we started to have more like complex conversations, and then once I finally came out as queer, that was like a very intense time for everybody. And yeah, I just felt, yeah, once again, more encouraged to share things about myself, but also ask them questions too. Because I'm like, we're in this very vulnerable time. You guys know what's going on with me. Like, can I share some advice on like how to deal with your stuff? Because honestly, like, I'm not trying to parent y'all, but as we heal from things that, you know, interactions with our parents as we grow up, it's like, I know I got into a habit of wanting to even try to get them to take accountability.
Yeah, yeah.
Even try to, like, therapize them because I was therapizing myself, stuff like that. So, and that is not always healthy, because I guess you kind of realize that, like, there's a lot of things that when people are at a certain age in their life, like, they're pretty set in some of their ways. And if you have the intention of changing them, it can be harmful to you if you know they're not going to change. So, yeah, I'm at a point where I love my parents. I respect my parents. But I'm grateful to also be able to share my opinions regardless of how they're going to take them. And I'm also grateful to be at a place where if they want to share an opinion, we can have a conversation about it without it blowing up. And that has taken a long, long, long journey to get there.
Right. Well, and to be able to respect each other as people, to see each other's humanity despite it all, right? Even if you disagree on something fundamentally, that is really powerful. Also, just quickly, I know that it said some of this in the information I sent over, but I didn't clarify at the beginning, and I want to throw it out there. If I ask anything and you're like, I don't want to talk about that, we do not have to. Just
okay,
we'll move past it. Absolutely. And if you share anything that after the fact you're like, can you take that out? Absolutely. Just let me know. So just so you know. Sorry I didn't clarify that at the beginning.
No, you're good.
another thing that I did want to ask about is coming to realize that you're queer. Having all of these realizations around the same time, like just what a, like a, it's like the tower card in tarot, right? Like there's something so beautiful about it. Like I love hate getting the tower because it's like, fucking A, like, what are we going to go through? But then also like, you know that you need to tear things down to be able to have a solid foundation to build from. My mentor says rock bottom is the solid foundation on which you can build your life. So I guess it sounds like that's the other piece of this kind of paradigm shift in your life. How did that realization find you? And what does your relationship to that look like now? As you know, because I think with all of these things, they continue to shift and grow with us too. So how has that continued to grow and shape you the more you get to know yourself?
Yeah. Well, I guess also at the end of senior year, like right before I went to college, I realized that I was, I'm like, what am I? Like, I'm like, yeah, I'm queer. I like people. I like everybody. Yeah, let's say that. And I guess it started with me thinking I like just like girls, but like I love everybody, honestly. And like I kind of knew that in like growing up, but so much shame around that coming from a very religious and Christian family. Who holds pretty problematic values. And beliefs about that stuff, and it was super scary. And but coming to Chicago and like immediately connecting with all of the queers, I was like, oh, okay, this is so valid. This is so valid. I feel so safe here to like be myself, and this is awesome. And started to like understand that like my queerdom went deeper into like me realizing that I am non-binary and how liberating that also is as an autistic person, and just like pinpointing the feeling of what it means to just be a human being who's always felt as just that, and has let like everybody else like gender me and really not fuck with that. And I'm just so grateful to like have a community that also feels the same way and like be able to have an identity that placates exactly how I feel and having the freedom to do that. And just so much more on being free and like realizing how important it is to be free. Was like the like pinpoint, like it was the part where I realized I'm like, oh, I gotta, yeah, I really care about this stuff. I really care about feeling free and being free and making sure anybody who wants to be whatever the fuck they want to be can be because they can. And like just getting really passionate about that. But I'm like, to this day, like it's been a whole journey of like personally like not really giving a fuck about how anybody sees me like at all, like it, because I'm realizing like people aren't gonna have their opinions, and people are just gonna choose to not understand because it's just too hard and it's too different from like what they've known and complicated, which I don't think is. But maybe it's because like I am a part of a generation that is like, come on, like just get with the times. Like literally, you also don't really have to care about what anybody else is doing. Like that's, it's just as easy as that. Like if you have problems, whatever, but like you don't have to say anything or you don't have to be hateful about it. Like it's just, I don't know. And to get that kind of energy from my family has been something that I've been processing and working through recently. And it's really hard, honestly, because I never thought that I was going to be so passionate about something that also has something to do with me, and that it was going to be so important to a point where, like, I don't even know if I can, like, truly, genuinely interact with people who don't see it the way that I do. And it's not even it's just a disagree to agree situation. It's just like, these are people's lives and rights, and like, that should be the main thing that we're focusing on, right? Really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's so powerful to your whole story, and it goes back to kind of at the beginning when you were talking about, like, your artistry as well as your spirituality as well as your social justice journey and all of these things. It's like your external world almost mirrors your internal world in having, mm-hmm. like, these different journeys and experiences that all come back and connect with you. And who you are and your humanity. And just like you said in the beginning, that really is the uniting thread. And I think your journey beautifully examples why seeing your own humanity and starting from the place of your own self-love is so important to be able to do that for other people, because mm-hmm. in you being able to radically love yourself and create freedom for yourself in an environment where you feel safe to do so, you're also doing that for other people. In the same way you're talking about, like, the safety that you found in Chicago community, like, you do that for those people there too, you know, mm-hmm. it's so reciprocal. And that really is freedom. Like, that mm-hmm. is freedom to completely just be, And mm-hmm. it's like, with everything in the socio-political sphere about freedom and democracy, I think your point is just so well taken. Truly. Thank you. I do want to make sure we don't miss talking about Knotted Lace or your creative journey. So I guess I'll just ask, what is it like coming into your own as a creative as mm-hmm. well in this kind of part of your identity, and falling in love, or maybe discovering a love of photography, however you describe it, and then being able to share it with other people as collaborators in mm-hmm. the magazine that you work on, Zine. Do you call it a magazine?
Yeah, it's a magazine. Yeah.
Magazine. Okay. Mm-hmm. Knotted Lace. And being able to do creative work in collaboration too, and what the creative process is to you. How do you describe mm-hmm. your relationship to creativity?
Yeah. Well, I guess facing imposter syndrome is probably the biggest thing that I've had to learn as a photographer. Like, I hesitated for so long to even call myself a photographer. I'm like, I'm just taking pictures, and I want to be good at it, and I'm not as good as other people, so I'm not a photographer. Like, just fighting that was, like, the hardest thing for the longest time, until, like, I finally put my work out there on my main, and I got, like, very positive feedback. And, like, obviously that validated me, and I was like, I want to do more. So, like, I kind of put out there, like, I'm looking for models, it's going to be free photo shoots, so come on. And, like, so many people reached out, and, like, just to see my work then from now has also, like, I'm like, oh, I've gotten so much better. Like, I know what it takes to, like, not make someone look completely orange in a picture. Like, that was, thank God I figured that one out. But yeah, just, like, accepting that, like, even though my work might not have been that great in my eyes then, like, I immediately learned from it. And that's what it, like, that's what you need to take from so many things, is that, like, you're gonna make a mistake, you gotta learn from it, and it doesn't mean you're not worth it, it doesn't mean you're not the real deal, and it doesn't mean you're not gonna get better, like, continuously. And then Yeah, once I started to just like see that like I was pretty good at this and I had a good eye, I think that's the main thing, is recognizing like from within that like I see things that are beautiful, and that's a beautiful thing to like freaking have, a beautiful trait to possess. And like wanting things to look good and accepting exactly what you're seeing in front of you as beautiful, and like also recognizing that like you're seeing someone in your eyes and they look amazing, but this person who sees that picture thinks they don't look good. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, that's crazy. And it like started to make me realize how many pictures I probably felt like I look awful in, but I actually looked amazing in, because other people said I looked amazing. So it's just so much to work through about like what it means to be beautiful. So that was awesome. And then like over time, like I was just making so many connections with people. I think that's how it started, like me really getting involved in Chicago's DIY artistic underground scene. I started to go to a lot of events here with like my best friend Sonia, and just to see like how many artists were doing it and like believed in themselves and like the community they had here already. And I'm like, this is new to me, because like, one, this is my first time being an adult. Like, I've never been to a DIY scene, but to also know that like these are underground artists really like making music, and it's not like SZA or something. Like, it was just mind boggling. I was like, why is this like my first time recognizing people's work? I'm just kidding. No, people are awesome. But yeah, so that was, yeah. Then I started to like take pictures at those events. And then like fast forward to like a few months ago, in December, this person, Colette, she like reached out to me, like, and we've been mutuals for years, and like she's a friend of a friend, Hannah, who happened to like be like my first photo shoot of me reaching out to people. It was like a full circle moment. She like was the one that like connected me to Colette, and she's like the creative director of the magazine. I literally can't remember if I said that, but yes. And she was like, will you take my pictures for Knotted Lace for like the creative director's page? And I was like, absolutely. And we met up, I took her pictures, and she is so dope. And I really connected with her. The pictures turned out amazing. And then in February, I was like, let's get lunch. And this happened to be 2 days before me and my ex broke up. LOL. So we got lunch, and started to talk more about the magazine. And she was just kind of telling me like that the point of the magazine is to highlight Chicago's artistic underground scene. And I was like, wait, dude, that's perfect. I've been in there. I'm all about that. Like, I am all about that. Please let me like be on, like, let me work with you. I can help out or whatever. And like the next day I met with the team, and it's like just a team of 5 people, and like everybody was super talented and had so much to offer. And like the graphic designer, like she showed me what she had going, and I was like, wait, we've got something really good here. Like, this looks really good. And yeah, it was like on from there. And like we talked about roles at that time, and I at the time wanted to be more of an event planning role, and like photographer obviously, but mainly event photographer. So we started talking about like doing another photo shoot of Liz and Colette. So Liz is the graphic designer and Colette is the creative director, and they wanted to do a photo shoot kind of focused on them as a unit, just because like Liz like graphically designed the whole magazine and like put together all of these artist submissions, and so many artists submitted. So that was awesome too, just to like realize how many people were interested in being a part of this magazine. And obviously like who doesn't want their work out there? So that's kind of how that started. And then we like kind of settled on like after that photo shoot, those pictures turned out amazing again. And so Colette kind of broke down the roles, and my role was like artistic director for future issues. Let me pause real quick.
You're good.
Because I'm like, where am I going with this? I don't even know where to, because I feel like I don't even, can you like ask me another question? I feel like I got that part out, but there's like more obviously leading up to this day, and I don't really know how to get there without just
That's okay.
Okay.
So what is the collaborative process like now? Because obviously like creating an art magazine, it's like you're featuring artists, but what you're doing as a team is also art and using your skills together. So what is that process like now that, you know, you are a team and you have titles and you work together as young people that want to both feature your own art, but also like encourage art for other people. But to do that with an eye towards creativity, and I would, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would assume ethically as well, since that is so important to you.
Yeah, it's been such a learning process, honestly. And like, cause the first issue, like I didn't hop on the team until like, it was pretty much done. So that's like, my role was like to take the pictures for the creative director's page. And then after that, we were rolling on the event planning. So that's kind of like what, when I hopped in, was to start our first launch party. And that, I started to realize how well we actually do work together. And a lot of like minds. And so Sid is the project manager. So I was working under them/with them. And that's what kind of just made me realize, I'm like, we've got a good thing going. Like, not only do we have a very intelligent, talented team, but everybody gets along really well. And I think that's like the main, like, that's how I collaborate best, is if I trust you to make sure we can get something good going. So after like the first launch party was a total success, like, we had like over 150 people show up. We made like all the money back for the magazines and the event space. And like, there was a lot of vendors there. We had musical performers. And just to see how many people like showed up who wanted to be involved and like to support us, was so validating and gave us like such a boost to get the next issue rolling. So I think that's when Colette and I started talking, and realized like my role as artistic director was like more so me going to be like her right-hand man, just because like, I know we were all so passionate about like making this work.
Yeah.
And like also once again, making meaning in such a hard, hard time. Like,
yeah.
Cause we were all were like, whoa, like we all are post-grads working at jobs we do not want to work at. Like, what can we do to like make, put our hearts and souls into something to literally make meaning? And so I think that's like, once we realized we were both very passionate about the project and like had a lot of similar ideas, like we got rolling on issue 2 with concepts and kind of like social media content, like how that was going to be laid out, and how we were going to do submissions and like make this an LLC, making sure people had waivers. Like, you inspired me too with the waivers. I was like, oh, we need to be making sure we have waivers to people's rights. Cause like the first issue didn't have that. And like, it's going to be the real deal. We need to make sure like this is ethical too. Like there were some concerns too with, you know, submissions, just like a lot of learning experience and like being like highs and lows for real.
So, totally.
Yeah. People are very, like, we're all very receptive to feedback. And I think that kind of was, like, another thing that continued to, like, inspired us to continue to work together.
Yeah, I love that. And I love what you said about making meaning, obviously. But it's, like, the ability, I think, so often we talk about making meaning as though it's like all or nothing, that it's like it has to be the sole force factor in your life. And it's like, it's going to be that whether you want it to be or not anyways. So
right,
it's really more about allowing, I think. And like you said, like we're working jobs that we don't love, but you know, like you said, capitalism, you got to pay the bills and you have to eat food, unfortunately. And the basics of human living aren't guaranteed to us. And finding a way to feed your soul while you feed your body is like innate to the human experience. And I think that's so beautiful that not only y'all have done, like created a space for you to do that for each other and yourselves in this community, but you're creating a space for other people to do that too. And as Knotted Lace continues to grow, it's going to be a place for other artists to do that too. Like I have goosebumps thinking about it. It's so beautiful and just completely generative from creativity, from your like heart for community and creativity. And I just have all the admiration in the world for that. Last question before we dive into closing it out. We are recording on the Scorpio full moon. It's like about to be actual time for the full moon when it hits. But talk to me about astrology and spirituality. I know you mentioned deconstruction a little bit. But what has your journey been like with that and discovering that element and that side of yourself too?
This also started freshman year of college, my special interest in astrology. Oh my gosh, I'm obsessed. As an autistic person, I like, as time went by, I started to realize like anything that allows me to understand myself and my behavior is super important. It's like so awesome. And just to like even attempt to understand others too, like I think that's what really got me, and for it to actually have some like factual I don't even know how to say factual backing,
like, yeah, like grounding,
it just makes sense. Like it just makes sense. And like starting to like really understand like what my sun sign, moon sign, rising, Mercury, Venus, all of that meant and how much it really does resonate with me. And then like also like leaning into more of like life patterns, life cycles, timing, and obviously the moon, just made me feel more connected to the earth. Because it once again made more meaning for like why we're here. Like it just started, everything just started to make a little bit more sense. I'm like, we're on this planet in space and there's a moon that moves the tides and we're 70% water. Like, of course this is going to affect us. Of course the stars have something to do with what's going on in my head and my body. So it just started to validate my existence just a little bit more, and provide me just more of an explanation on like why people move the way they do. And then also like I also got into tarot and I have a green witch oracle deck. I love her, but I've got back into her recently. Just because I do feel rather spiritually connected, and any message I'll take. You're right. I did need to hear this. This resonates with me right now. Thank you. So,
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I saw like a reel or a TikTok or something the other day that said, astrology is just as true as Christianity is, except we don't tell gay people to hate themselves. And then of course all the comments are like, actually astrology has some scientific backing too, right? And I'm like, yeah, like that's kind of the thing, is like not only is it not a thing, but it's like even for those out there who aren't big in astrology or tarot or occult or metaphysic world, I completely agree with you that it's like, if there's, even if I am completely making it up and my subconscious is making meaning out of these things, if it makes you a better person, like if it gives you something to mm-hmm. work on and grow with, like who am I to say no? And also I like exactly. thinking that I am connected to everyone around me and the universe, and that makes me a better person. Right. So I completely agree. I love that. Yeah. To go into our closing questions, firstly, mm-hmm. thank you so much. If any of our listeners are curious about you, your photography, knotted lace, or anything else, all of your links will be in the video notes, the podcast description, all of the good stuff. So everybody, please go check Loveth out. Spread the love, right?
Yes.
So there's that. But in light of the conversation we had and everything we talked about, is there anything that you want to clarify, reemphasize, return to, or anything we missed that you want to add? This is space for you to go anywhere that you want to go.
Yeah. I mean, I would say recognize your worth. Recognize that you have inherent value by being a human being. You don't have to do anything to deserve that. and I hope that that allows you to take steps that need to be taken to feel okay at the end of the day. It's also totally okay to not feel okay. There's a lot going on in the world. Give yourself grace. Rest when you can. If you feel like you're sleeping too much, it's because you need to rest. So don't feel that way. But yeah, thank you so much, Reese, for having me on here. I feel so heard and validated right now. I'm like super grateful to even be here today and like to have connected with you at Lake Hill. I've literally made such great connections from that crazy little school. Yeah, what a crazy little experience.
It is crazy.
And yeah, thanks for having me, for real. I feel awesome.
I'm so glad. Mm-hmm. My last question, just to put a little button on our conversation, is what is one word to describe how you're feeling right now? I know you just threw out a few, but if you could pick one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Relieved.
Oh, that's relieved. So beautiful. Can I ask why?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I was a little nervous for this because I do talk and you never know what's going to come out of my mouth sometimes. But I feel super relieved to have said what I said, and I feel confident about everything that was said. Yeah.
I'm so glad. You absolutely should. I'm so glad you do. And I'm so grateful that this is the platform that you chose to say all of those beautiful things at and share it with me and with the Cohere Collective. So thank you so much, Loveth. Thank you all so very much for being here. And a huge thank you to Loveth for her time, energy, and vulnerability and openness during this episode. I always feel so filled up after having these conversations, just because this is what I love doing. I love just asking questions and listening and being a part of conversations like this. But there is something just so uniquely special about connecting with people that I haven't been able to in a while, and being able to see the way they've grown and then also feel the way that I've grown through the mirroring of them. That it's almost like when you go home for Christmas and you're like, whoa, I'm really different, because this is like a very clear benchmark. So it's always just so personally fulfilling to have episodes like this. But even just to talk about the vast array of the things that we were able to in this episode, I always want to incorporate justice work and identity in these really important topics as a part of coherent living and the Cohere Collective, because coherence includes you. You are a deep part of it, and we can't live coherently if the world around us puts up blocks for certain aspects of self and swaths of the population to not have that opportunity. So this is all very much built into the framework of what coherence is, and I'm so glad that I was able to chat about these things with Loveth and learn more about them myself. If you are interested in finding Loveth, links will be down in the video description below, wherever you are listening or watching, as will Knotted Lace, the Chicago-based art magazine that Loveth is a part of. So please go support Loveth, go check out Knotted Lace. Knotted Lace, I've watched and seen some stuff online, and it is just really such a cool space that they are creating of support and shining light on underground art in a way that is different and new, and it feels deeply important to me. So I highly recommend you go check it out and get into it. If you are interested in working with me to find and pursue your purpose, you can learn more about Coherent Design, our unique approach to life coaching, at the link in the description down below. You can also head to www.thecoherecollective.com to learn more about the Cohere Collective and our mission, all the things that we're doing over here, and how to be a part of it, how to live coherently, and follow us wherever you have social media. We're at the Cohere Collective. Instagram is going to be the main place that you can see updates, but we also are over on TikTok, here on YouTube, across all the podcasts, all the good places. We would love to connect with you anywhere and everywhere. A big thank you to Nicole Ostreicher for making Meaning's art and podcast cover. You can find her on Instagram at Nicole O Creates or Nicole O Design. And a big thank you to Tristan Morgan for making Meaning's theme music. You can find him on Instagram at Tristan Morgan. Right now, I am feeling transformative. These last few days have been a lot for me personally, to be fully transparent. We had a scare with our dog Sage, and I mean, everyone who knows me knows how much I adore her. She's the love of my life. And it's scary. It's scary when things happen. And it really woke me up to some other underlying anxieties that I thought that I was really looking at and facing, but it digs some stuff up when you have deep nervous system triggers like that. And yeah, and now I just feel like I'm really on the precipice of a transformation into something new, into more growth. And it's hard. I think what this process is reminding me more than anything is the transformation that I ask so many other people in my life to do, not just from like a, you know, everyone should be growing and changing, but really my work being about helping people transform to live coherently, which asks deep transformation. It's a reminder of how hard that work is and how that work continues. It's a never-ending process, even though there are cycles and chapters throughout it, and there are moments of closings. Those closings are always openings of something else, and the journey is ever moving. It's ever forward. And that can get really exhausting and tiring, but it's hard work at work worth doing. But it's a good reminder of how much we all still have to learn, but especially myself, and of how much I still want to do, the way I want to keep pushing forward, the person that I want to keep evolving into, and just to breathe through it, just to breathe through it and to support ourselves, because we are our own best allies through this. We have to be. And that's the work. That's the greatest work of our lives, is making ourselves into our greatest work of art, right? If I can use a trite saying to talk about this briefly. Well, thank you again so very much for being here, for being the best and my most favorite part of the Cohere Collective, of Making Meaning. Thank you for being a part of my Making Meaning process, of my coherence. And as always, I hope you feel like you are living more coherently. Until next time, love.